Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
Hello, Peter. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, I'm doing all right. Doing good. Okay.
Yeah.
Looking forward to talking about the games.
Are you?
Theoretically.
Theoretically possible that I am.
Yeah. If this show was brought to people by some kind of sponsor, would there be an air of truth to that?
There would, yes. In fact, I don't know why you're talking theoretically possible, because it actually is brought to the people by a sponsor, and I've got it right here. Would you like to hear all about it?
I'd love to.
Hear all about it, as they used to say, the little newsboys.
Roll up. Is that... Did they used to say roll up? Or am I inventing that? Am I confusing that with a different thing?
With like a circus ringmaster, I think. I don't know. I'm not... In any case, doesn't matter. Yeah. Because, hey, video games, they're for flipping nerd, dork, uncool, SWAT dweebs, is what they
are.
Tell
me about it, yeah.
God, who'd want to be one of those people who plays video games? Do you know what's much cooler than playing a video game?
What?
Reading.
That's true.
That's true. And so we're here to tell you, you know what, stop listening to this video game podcast. Get out of the world of gaming. Go into the world of reading. Find a good reading podcast to listen to instead. And, more to the point, find a good set of books to read. And if you need to sort of transition yourself from the video game sphere to the reading sphere, and you need a good kind of middle ground, a sort of halfway house, why not check out the upcoming book trilogy, Mass Effect Literary Edition?
Oh, okay.
They've all been written up into a set of books. They're probably choose your own adventure books, aren't they? Because it's an RPG. So.
Oh, wow. They've got to be massive.
Yeah, I know. Turn to page 4009 to kill everyone on the suicide mission.
So is Mass Effect 1 to 3 included in the same volume, or are they three separate books that you buy together in like a package?
Yes, it's the latter. It's three different books. Oh, okay. They come in one of those little cardboard holders where all three of them are sort of nestled in together.
I like those. That's nice.
But it obviously, given that they're so big to kind of give you every chance to make every decision that you make in the games as well, they are, the box that it comes in is actually a small shipping container. Hope you've got room. Okay. Hope you got room somewhere for that.
Does it look a bit like the scientist posing next to the calculations that took NASA to the moon?
Yeah, it looks exactly like that.
Okay.
With the books towering over her.
Sounds like a lot of work to read that.
You know what? You know what would be easier?
What?
Just playing the games, I suppose.
That's true, but that's for losers. I thought we established that.
Well, it is, but unfortunately, there's not really an alternative to playing games, because it turns out that's not real.
Oh, gosh darn.
All books are lies that I just made up there, and you have to carry on playing games.
Books aren't actually real, idiots. No. We really had you going there for a second, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
We made it sound like books existed.
They used to exist. They're extinct now. They were burned by communists and Nazis throughout various... different periods and geographical locations in the 1900s.
There's actually debate among some in the scientific community as to whether or not books ever existed. Some don't believe it.
They think we're just misidentifying scrolls.
Yeah, it's all about scrolls, baby. Gotta have those scrolls. Anyway, you know who we're really sponsored by, Peter?
Who?
The wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as $1 per month you can support the channel? What are we? I often find it difficult to label us
as an entity.
You mean
because we've got Twitch and YouTube, so that's two channels, and then we've also got the podcast. Yeah.
And a website, but obviously we don't
We're a multimedia franchise.
See, that's what I've taken to labelling us a video game media company from time to time when talking to PR, because that feels the most accurate. But anyway, you can support our video game multimedia company and allow us to keep doing what we're doing. And also, you'll support the podcast as well. Plus, at the $1 tier, you get to submit questions for the podcast through the weekly podcast post. That's where we source all of our questions exclusively for this podcast. So do consider going there. Patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Firstly, Peter, where are we walking today?
We are walking. Let's not do a sponsor-related one this time, because we always do that. Okay. Let's instead walk...
Well, it can't be a book because those don't exist.
No, it can't be through a library because they also don't exist because books don't exist. Therefore, yeah.
Well, you can get the DVDs from the library. I think that's all they do now. I believe it's called Blockbuster.
Can we walk through a Blockbuster or in front of one?
Yeah, I love a Blockbuster. There's so many.
There are. Yeah. I wonder if there are any decent definition photos of Blockbusters, because by the time people started taking good pictures, they'd already gone.
No, they're still around. Everywhere.
Everywhere.
We love them. I think most people ended up buying all the stuff from closing Blockbusters and rebuilt them in their basements. That's what Reddit has led me to believe. Mm-hmm. So there's probably some decent footage of someone's basement.
Yeah.
With Blockbuster signs. But there we are. We're walking across through a Blockbuster today. Brilliant. Yeah. Question one, Peter.
It's from Ellie Nicholas, who says, is there a game that completely put you off a series or franchise? Did you ever go back to that series or franchise? Thank you, Ellie, for your question.
Thank you, Ellie.
I was tempted to put Kingdom Hearts here for a brief moment, but it doesn't really count, because I think the implication here is it's maybe a franchise that one has enjoyed for several games. Whereas with me, Kingdom Hearts, I really loved the first one. I sort of missed out on the second one a little bit, and I had every intention of playing it. But then, in the meantime, they started doing all of their Final Mix 1.8 chainsunlimited.com/sequel-3 prequel.
Play the mobile game.
Yeah. And then I thought, well, I'm not even going to bother playing number two now, even though I think that one you probably could play without having played any of the others. But certainly Kingdom Hearts 3, I mean, that was a joke when it came out, wasn't it? There were people releasing like lore videos to catch you up that were half an hour long, and it was almost... I mean, some of them were done by serious Kingdom Hearts fans who were genuinely trying to do a public service, but other people, I think, were doing them just because it's funny. Like, I'm going to catch you up on everything you need to know. And then 45 minutes later, they're like, so there you go, now you're all caught up.
I don't remember anything.
Yeah, so Kingdom Hearts is a sort of answer, but not really, because, as I say, I really liked the first one, and then it all got weird. So in terms of a series that I did really, really enjoy and played every installment of until I was put off, the Tekken franchise. Big fan of Tekken 1, 2, 3, Tag. Tekken 4, I thought, was a bit weak. It wasn't great, but it didn't quite put me off. Then played Tekken 5, thought that was really good. Tekken 6 came along, flipping hated that game. Oh my god. It has one of the worst bosses in any fighting game ever. And I used to wonder whether it was just me who thought that, and maybe I was just rubbish. I did a little bit of research before this podcast just to make sure, just to kind of make myself feel better in my own kind of insecurities. And it turns out that, yes, Azazel from Tekken 6, the big Egyptian crystal crocodile man who's about 25 feet tall, is in a lot of like lists and like IGN awards and things as being one of the worst bosses, one of the worst video game stages, characters. Tekken 6, one of the most frustrating video games of all time. All these different, you know, sort of negative awards that it's received and lists it's made its way into. So that really put me off. And to the point that I almost thought about not carrying on with the series at all. I wasn't really going to even bother with Tekken 7. However, I think it came out while we were at What Culture, and we got sent a copy. And as the person who, other than Tekken 6, really liked the series and knew quite a lot about it, it kind of fell to me to play that. And fortunately, I was brought back. So I think it mostly answers the question. It did completely put me off it, even though that I did end up playing the game immediately after it. But I wasn't necessarily going to. It was just kind of fortuitous that the universe forced my hand, and I was like, okay, all is forgiven for now. But certainly Tekken 6, man, what a poor game.
What a poor game. I actually got the platinum in Tekken 7 somehow.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. I'm terrible at it as well. I had to play online and everything. It was awful. But I totally get that. I fell off a couple of franchises after inherently good games that just didn't really grab me. So I was a big Call of Duty fan, admittedly, largely in the wake of Call of Duty 3 and then certainly Modern Warfare. And then I couldn't really get into Modern Warfare 2. Lots of people love it, and I didn't really like it. And then I didn't really like Modern Warfare 3 either. But I loved Black Ops, the original one by Treyarch. And I thought that was such a good game. And I loved the zombies mode, the sort of the furthering of the zombies mode from World at War. And I loved the story, and I played a lot of the multiplayer. And so when Black Ops 2 was coming out, I was really excited. And then I just didn't really like Black Ops 2 that much. Or at least nowhere near as much as I liked Black Ops 1. At which point, I just sort of gave up on the franchise, which I think was probably a smart move, because Advanced Warfare and Infinite Warfare were infamously not the sort of when Call of Duty jumped the shark a bit. And they were just, I mean, that series is ridiculous anyway, but they were just sort of reaching for idea. What about space? What about future warfare? And it's like, no, I don't want that. And what about if Lewis Hamilton was a mechanic on a spaceship? No, thanks. I'm all right. And then I hopped back in with World War II, and I played the story for that. Didn't touch the multiplayer. But yeah, I think it was Black Ops 2 that was inherently, you know, it was a good game, but it didn't do much for me. And so I fell off. And the other one is Assassin's Creed Black Flag, which is a lot of people's favorite Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah.
Because you get to be a pirate. And it was one of, it was obviously the first Assassin's Creed game. One of the, I can't remember if it was a launch game, but it was certainly a very early game for the PS4, Xbox One launches. And a lot of people were blown away by how amazing it looked and all the things you could do. And after getting severely burned by Assassin's Creed 3 and not liking it at all, just the prospect of more of that, but in an even bigger map where you have to slowly go around on a boat as well, it just completely turned me off, and I did not want to play it. So I didn't get very far in Black Flag before giving up on the series until Valhalla last year. So
I'm inclined to agree with the Call of Duty thing as well. I went out at a different point, really. I think kind of almost with the first Modern Warfare, which I know that's probably the most controversial thing.
That's
a lot of people's favorite of all time. It's a great game for sure, and I enjoyed the multiplayer a lot. I had a good time playing multiplayer in Modern Warfare. But to me, Call of Duty was all about World War II. That's what I enjoyed. Call of Duty 2 is one of my favorite first person shooters of all time. Call
is
of
that
Duty
big
3,
red one.
No, just the kind of the main one. Because that was on Big Red One was on PS2, wasn't it? That was the only
I love that subtitle. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. That was the only PS2 version of Call of Duty 2, wasn't it? But no, the kind of the base Call of Duty 2, which was late Xbox, early 360, was it? I think.
Yeah, it was a 360. I think it was a 360 launch game.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that game is absolutely fantastic. I think it still looks great today in its own kind of stylized way. And so when Call of Duty suddenly moved on to Modern Warfare, I thought, look, they're doing this well, no question. But, you know, I don't know if I'm not as into this just as a theme. Yeah. And when they've delved back into World Wars since then, I've thought, okay, great, yeah, I'll check these out. But other than that, you know, I've never played Black Ops, any of them. Maybe a little bit of multiplayer at like a friend's house, but outside of that, I've not touched them. So yeah.
Well, maybe they'll get you back one day. I will say 2019's Modern Warfare was really good. I was very impressed by that, and that made me interested again. And then Warzone, obviously, is just a phenomenon on its own now. But
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I'm back aboard the COD train. We'll see what they do this year.
Well, by the sounds of it, they're going to be doing probably more of the likes of Warzone, because Activision have moved Toys for Bob.
I know, isn't it sad?
Yeah.
All into support roles. What a weird... We'll see what happens. What we'll do, Peter, is we'll get a Spyro the Dragon gun skin, and that will be your new Spyro game.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? A Crash Bandicoot skin, but you don't play as Crash Bandicoot. There's just like a little Wumpa fruit on someone's helmet, and that's it.
Now I'm interested.
That's the dying gasps of Crash Bandicoot as he's absorbed into Call of Duty. That's tragic.
Probably worth pointing out, there was a lot of reactionary stuff, people saying, oh, well, now they've cancelled all Crash and Spyro, clearly. I think they've since said that's... Well, I don't think they've not outright said that's not the case, but I think it's important to point out that they have not actually said... We're not doing any more Crash and Spyro. So
no,
there was a lot.
I think
of,
there will be. There'll
yeah,
be more in there.
I think there will be. I follow that whole circle on social media, and my God, the absolute storm that was brewed that day.
Yeah,
and for no real reason, you know, people just jumping to their own conclusions. But yeah, that's a big digression. But there we go. Those are our answers to question one. Fantastic.
Yeah, there they are. Let's move on, Peter. Mm-hmm. To what we play in.
Oh, okay.
It's what we play in time. Peter, what have you been playing?
I've played a few things this week. It's been an exciting week for me. I started the week with a little bit of Minecraft, carried on with my friends. I mean, in the previous podcast, I was talking about, I wonder how long that'll last. It may have now reached the point where it's going to die because...
Oh, no. 2 weeks.
Because... I mean, it's still going for now. I'm only guessing, but it's not just me. Several of us now have several games that we wish to play, and it might kind of get in the way of just the time that we have to play Minecraft is the issue. It's not that no one wants to play Minecraft anymore. It's that there's other things that, you know, are probably just going to take priority, sadly. So we'll see how it goes. But we've had a good time, and if we continue to do so, then that's great. It's always nice to just drop into Minecraft, play a bit more, and you kind of know as soon as you start a new world, you're like, this won't last probably super long, but I'll enjoy it while I'm playing it. So that's been good, and we'll see how much more I do. But more importantly, the main thing I've been playing this week, of course, is Resident Evil Village.
Nice.
Which at time of recording we're going to be streaming the first part of it today.
I'm very excited.
So when this podcast goes out, you can check out the VOD if you missed that on Thursday. So that's been a lot of fun. I've played about 4.5 hours now. So I've only actually had 3 sessions with it. In fact, last night when I finished playing, after probably an hour and a half, 2 hours, something like that, I looked at the in-game timer just because I wondered, I wonder how long I've been playing now, because I knew that I would be talking about it today in the podcast. And my save file is only like marked at like 2 hours or something. And I was like, that cannot be right. I was like, there's no way I've only been playing for 2 hours. And I checked on my PS5 that, you know, where it says like how much time you've spent playing. And that was much higher. That was like as I say, it was 4.5 hours, something, 4 hours, I think. I know that some in-game timers behave strangely. Like, I know that the Spyro speedrunners, I know we're going back many years now in comparison to Resident Evil 8, but maybe there's always been this trend with in-game timers where the Spyro in-game timer is used by the speedrunners, and it's completely different to, like, the real in-game time. I don't think it's to do with cutscenes, or if it just... I don't know. I don't know what dictates, like, how these things are marked, but in any case, my PlayStation says that I've been playing for, I think, 4 hours, and I think it's probably more like 4.5, so that's a weird one. So I've been thoroughly enjoying that. That's a lot of fun. Man, it's a very beautiful game. And having played more of it since we did our Quipscope, I would say a few opinions have changed, or I maybe made some statements where at the time I wasn't as informed as I could have been, because I only played like maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. So for example, I think I said that it's maybe as scary as Resident Evil 7, but just in its own way, it's more of a monster flick. I would probably say now it's not as scary as Resident Evil 7. I don't think so. There are certainly some moments in there, of course, but I think it's very much more action based. It's like Resident Evil 4 in that sense, and in a lot of other senses as well. It's really fun to play in a completely different way to Resi 7. There's more gunplay involved. There's more enemy variety. The world is far more interesting. In that, yes, you've got the village, but you've got the castle interior as well. And then even within the castle, there's like an outdoor courtyard. There's like down in the dungeons. There's the very nice opulent, you know, kind of main floor. So you feel like you're experiencing just more variety in the areas that you explore in comparison to Resident Evil 7, which I know it had the main house and then the old house and then the ship, but everything was still just a bit grey and quite samey in that game, I thought, in comparison, anyway. So thoroughly enjoying that, and as I say, check out our VOD of our first segment that we streamed on Thursday. The other game I've been playing this week, which has taken up more time than I expected it to, because I wasn't that optimistic, is the Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance remaster.
Okay.
This was announced out of nowhere, pretty much, and at first I was very excited, and then the more I looked into it while I was waiting for it to release, because they had some issues with getting it onto storefronts for some reason, it took them longer than they wanted. I kind of looked at footage and some of the people who managed to get hold of it and play it, and it seemed like it had been a bit rushed and half-assed and stuff. And we may well have done a Quipscope on it actually by now, on Thursday or Friday, I don't know. But I expected I was going to be a bit disappointed, but I gave it a go, and it's actually really good. It's what I wanted from it. It's just a nice looking version of a game that I really loved on the PS2, and it's just nice to relive those memories. And other than one or two just occasional kind of strange little tiny glitches, it's really not too bad. The lighting's not as good, and you know, I think they've maybe, there are things that they could have done to make this even better that they didn't seem to bother with. So it's certainly still been maybe rushed a little bit, but it's not disappointing, I guess, is the bottom line. So I've played through a third of that, which is why I've not played as much Resident Evil as I expected to have played before we started streaming it. But I'm certainly far enough ahead that we're not likely to catch up with me in 2 hours. So...
Right.
That's what I've been playing this week. How nice. About you?
Well, before I talk about me, I wanted to check in on how you were finding Lady Dimitrisse, because I remember when sort of the fanfare about her was first kicking off and all the memes and so on, you seemed a bit bewildered by it on the podcast. You weren't really on board with the I want her to step on me crowd. I'm just interested to see where you are now, having experienced it.
I've kind myself. Of, I mean, I don't think I quite understood at first why people had focused in on this character in particular, based on all of pop culture. I thought, is it just that she's tall? And then if it is because she's tall, why is that? I don't really understand why that's more appealing or less appealing, or why that has any bearing on anything. So I kind of didn't quite get the joke. And then over time, you know, it just became, it's a meme, isn't it? And it's like, mm-hmm. whether or not you necessarily got it in the first place, I got on board with it. And I've on social media, I've done a couple of like posts and stuff over the past couple of months, I think, kind of getting in on that joke. I think in all seriousness though, like, do I actually think that she's like appealing outside of the fact that she wants to kill you and she's a vampire? I mean,
that is not what I'm asking you, but yeah. No, I know. Tell me.
I know that if you're, I need to finish that sentence first. Do I think she's appealing as a kind of joke? Oh yes, senpai, I want that. Or is it something that people have just kind of latched onto? Even though, so for example, there's like the blue aliens from Mass Effect, right?
And yes, the Ansari,
as I mean, that's a joke that's going to go over everyone's heads.
No, that's just for us, yeah.
Yeah, the Ansari. I don't actually look at a blue alien and think, oh hell yeah, I want some of that. But I can kind of see where the joke comes in, or where you can kind of sort of pretend that this is appealing. Whereas with her, I still don't quite understand where the joke ends and the actual infatuation begins, because some people seem to take it quite seriously, and for me, I'm like, I'm not sure about that. But in any case, to answer, I think, what you're really asking from me here, I think she's less, I think the problem with the Lady Dimitrisse thing is that we kind of came up with this thing as a collective before the game was even released, based on a couple of clips of a tall woman. And I think some people might be disappointed because they'll almost go into this game expecting that she's going to be sort of sexualized, and that she might be flirting with you a little bit throughout the game and kind of chasing you down and like, I'm going to get you, Ethan, and that she's going to maybe sort of give you a kiss before she kills you, sort of thing, like a sort of Poison Ivy kind of character. And that's not what you get from her at all. She hates you. She like really does not like you. She wants you dead.
But Peter, is that not part of the fun? Is that not part of the meme? Is that she genuinely wants you dead? And the affectionate flirtation is only one way.
It's unrequited.
Exactly. Knowing that she can and will hurt you. And that's, I think, maybe part of the joke for a lot of people, and also perhaps part of the fetish for people who are taking it very seriously.
I mean, this is the thing, though. I think maybe there's not a consensus on exactly what this meme is. And maybe that's partly why I struggled with it at first and didn't quite understand it. Is I think some people maybe do think that. Some people maybe want her to be a bit more kind of flirtatious and a bit kind of, I'm trying to think of other examples outside of Poison Ivy, who literally, the reason she kisses you is because she's got poison lips. So that's kind of, but you know, there are certain, particularly I think stereotypically it's a female villain. There are villains in pop culture who kind of toy with their prey, and they're very flirtatious and sexual, and they like kiss the hero before they try and stab him and stuff. I guess a bit sort of Catwoman, a bit kind of, I'm sure there are other non-Batman examples out there, but
like a femme fatale.
Femme fatale. And she's not that at all. And I think some people maybe are getting in on this joke, expecting her to be in the game hunting you down, because it's almost a vampire thing anyway, inherently. Like some depictions of Dracula have him as this charming man who he woos the virgins that he's going to bite the necks of. He doesn't just hunt you down growling and screaming and grab you by the head and bite your neck. He actually sort of, you know, he offers you a glass of wine, he sits you down in his mansion, and then he'll sort of make his move and bite your neck. And I think that might be what some people are expecting. Some people won't be, and you're right, like the appeal is that she will kill you. She does not want to do anything nice to you at all. But yeah, it's a strange one. So depending on what you want out of the Lady Dimitrisse thing and what you're expecting, you might be disappointed, you might be very pleased. Because rest assured, she does absolutely want to stomp on you and bite your neck. But she doesn't want to give you a little kiss before she does it, if that's what you're hoping for.
Well, that's an interesting conversation. We've heard from... Was it a dominatrix that you brought along in Weird News the other week? So we've heard from a dominatrix about what would happen if she stepped on you. I think maybe now we need to hear from some kind of perhaps psychologist or something about the mindset involved in wanting potentially something that could hurt you to step on you.
I saw very interesting.
From a sexual perspective, I would be interested to learn. I don't really want her to step on me because that would really hurt.
It would really hurt.
I'm not into that, but I'm on board for the joke. But some people very much are taking it seriously. Like, yes, I would like that to happen to me.
Yeah.
And I am interested in that perspective, certainly. Like,
going to write an advert on Craigslist. If you are over 5'11" as a woman, please come and stand on me with stilettos, you know, that sort of thing. I did see an interesting article. I mean, I know we want to move on to the rest of what we're playing, but I'll be quick here. I once saw an interesting article. It was around the time that Twilight was at its peak in terms of people being interested. And it was I don't know if it was a psychologist. I think it was a psychologist, actually, who was interested in the ideas of romance and, like, attraction and what kind of... essentially what turns people on is what they were kind of talking about. And it was why the vampire as a character is, on paper, if you just go by sort of committee, it's the perfect thing for a woman to be attracted to. And the way they'd done it is that they'd, like, analyze loads and loads of fan fiction, not of Twilight, but just erotic fiction that women had written on the internet and submitted to God knows what websites. And it was just the fact that women talk a lot about kind of musculature, and obviously in Twilight they were quite kind of beefy, and they talk a lot about let's say the flow of blood through a man, if you see what I'm talking about there. And so there's these certain motifs that occur in even non-vampire fiction that if you put them all together, they create a vampire story just sort of inherently. And
well, there you go, women.
Yeah.
Solved.
And like I say, it's all just on paper with ticking boxes, and you can't really just analyze those things. And oh, well, they talk about this, so they're like this. You know, I'm sure most women will be like, no, I don't want a vampire.
Than that,
anyway,
it's interesting. It's interesting, the phenomenon. Like, I think maybe, again, we're still talking about Lady Dimitrisse. She will continue, I think, to dominate conversation, quite literally.
Yeah.
For quite a while, because the reaction has been so... I've never seen a reaction like this to a character before a game's even come out. Like,
people can't believe their luck.
No, and I think the directors were like, we're thrilled with the reaction. And then the marketing team were like, oh, thank God, let's put her on buses and stuff. We've solved that. But yeah, like, it's really interesting, because I think part of it is perhaps just the fact that she is something to behold. Like, seeing her stoop through a door is supernatural. Like, you don't see that, and the fact that she is dangerous as well is got to play a part, right? That she could and wants to hurt you is a fear response in your brain.
Well, I mean, again, we're still talking about it. Let me just
quickly
tell
going.
A story about something that happened to me last night after I turned off the game about half past 11. She nearly got me. It was dark. I went round the house. I locked the door, secured my home, and all the lights were off. And I was just walking through the house in the pitch dark. And we've got a tumble dryer in our garage, but we don't use it for economical and ecological reasons. They're not good. So we hang our stuff, and we've got a little clothes horse that we put most of the just t-shirts and socks and stuff on. But Amy, my fiancée, had washed our bedding, and you can't really hang that on a clothes horse. It takes up the entire thing. So what she'd done, and I didn't realize this as I was walking through the house, is
assembled a Lady Dimitrisse analog.
She had hung a bed sheet from the top of a door, an open door.
Oh,
so as I'm walking through the house, after just playing Resident Evil, I saw, and granted, I know Lady Dimitrescu is like 12 foot tall, so this still wasn't tall enough to be her, but I saw like an 8 foot white thing draped in sort of white fabric standing in my living room. And honestly, just for a moment, I was like, she's here. And she wasn't. She wasn't. But
oh, no.
It was so tall and white, and it was a tall white thing in a dress, effectively. And once I'd realised I'm safe, I thought it was quite funny, because if you go back, you know, decades, if not centuries, people used to scare each other by putting sheets over their heads and pretending to be ghosts. Like, that's how you used to scare someone. Nowadays, you couldn't just put a sheet on your head and go,
"Woo!" No, you definitely can't.
But I thought it was funny that I got literally just scared by a sheet, as people used to do in like the Victorian times.
Wow.
It was great. That.
Incredible.
So anyway, that's what I've been playing this week.
Yeah, let us know. The conversation rages on about Lady D, the public reception. Really interesting.
Yeah, that was like a big discussion, really, wasn't it? It was. We have to
Should
do
just,
one now.
James, just cut that out and move it to the end. Yeah. Yeah. Nice and simple. So, very quickly, I've been playing a little bit more Crash Bandicoot 2.
Oh, yeah.
Haven't finished it yet. Played some Warzone the other night. Did some of the mini Royale mode was back. Won three games.
Oh, well done.
Three games of it, yeah. Played a little bit of Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne HD Remaster.
Ooh.
I'm done. I don't really like it.
Oh, no.
All it does is remind me of Persona and makes me want to play Persona. And I know it's obviously a very good game in its own right, and it has its audience and all. May a thousand blossoms bloom. All the power to you. But for me personally, playing it just made me think, wow, I've played like the evolution of what this is, and I would much rather be spending my time playing that. So I think I'm done. Also, Crash Team Racing Platinum, done. Got it.
Fantastic. Yeah, courtesy, I saw your tweet.
Courtesy of Cameron, one of our listeners and Patreon supporters. You can add him on PSN, by the way, Cameron Allen, all one word. And he has told me that he will gladly help people with their time trials. So if you want some help, hit him up. He's there. He's ready to help.
Cameron, you're about to get inundated.
Oh, I don't know. Don't set us up that big. You might not get anything. And then we'll look like, oh, what a crap podcast.
Yeah,
no one even wants any Crash Team Racing help. I started up a game of Borderlands 2 last night.
Oh, okay.
On the Handsome Collection, me and two of my Warzone buddies started playing through that, and that was so delightful. We played it for about 4 hours. Borderlands 2 is so good, and the whole time we'd all played Borderlands 3, we were talking about how we loved Borderlands 3, but how Borderlands 2 was just so much better. Mm-hmm. And man, I hope when Borderlands 4 rolls around, they sort of take more from Borderlands 2 than they did from other looter shooters and where the genre has, you know, got to in sort of the 7-year break between Borderlands 2 and Borderlands 3. Because I don't want the live service stuff. I don't want that.
Yeah.
The story wasn't very good. I didn't really like the characters. Borderlands 2, you know, had Handsome Jack, widely cited, one of the best video game antagonists. He's charismatic. He's brilliantly acted, brilliantly written. It was great. Really good game. So I'm looking forward to playing some more of that at some point. And finally, Returnal.
Yes.
I have not only finished it, but I've got the platinum.
Fantastic.
Once I beat the final boss, it suddenly, because all the pressure was lifted from my shoulders on every subsequent run through various biomes to find collectibles and so on, I was flying, Peter. I couldn't be touched. Like, I was just going through like three biomes back to back to back, and admittedly not facing the boss in either of them because I didn't need to, because I was just looking for collectibles. But even so, like, I couldn't be stopped. I was having the runs of my life, which, you know, usually comes after Dominoes. But
it does,
in this instance, it was Returnal. And I really, really like Returnal. It is, I think, more stable than it was, but like as you saw on Twitter, Peter, like that I encountered numerous bugs that a lot of people did, getting locked in rooms that I couldn't escape from, so I had to restart a run. It crashed my console. I had the sound drop out a few times. On one occasion, I was using like a teleporter thing to take me to a new part of the map, and the camera was following my sort of like blue ethereal form as it was being teleported, and the camera just stopped, and the ethereal form just disappeared off screen.
Oh, no.
And never caught up. So then I had to restart it again. I was more afraid of interacting with pieces of machinery, because sometimes the doors would lock after you interacted with something that would cause like a little cutscene that you could then skip of like you interacting with it. Mm-hmm. And say like there's a sort of plinth type thing that you can lie on and it will recover your health. You'll come across those sometimes. I was more afraid of interacting with those and then not being able to leave the room afterwards because the door was broken,
yeah,
than I was in fighting some of the enemies, which I think said a lot, mm-hmm, about it. But it's beautiful. It's really hard. Again, not for everyone. But I think when it comes Game of the Year time, it's definitely going to be part of the conversation for me.
Oof,
very, very good game. But I don't imagine it'll be long before it's on Plus, because who's going to buy it? Doesn't seem many people have. We will see. But yeah, great game. And that is what I've been playing.
Wonderful. Well, it's time, as we reach the 40-minute mark of this podcast, to move on to question two.
Okay, Michael Milan, I hope you're ready for the shortest answer you've ever had. Were you boys arcade goers back in their heyday? And if so, do you have any cherished memories of these times? I'll always remember when my local spot got a Tekken 4 cabinet, and I spotted it from the window before I even entered. I can still see that opening teaser footage, he says. All the time my friend funded our successful quest to beat Area 51. There's something interesting about the culture of that world, and I'd love to know if you have stories from that time.
Hush phone. Sorry, that may have been picked up there. Boom, boom.
You've got to buy everyone a beer, I think, is the...
Yeah.
Is the podcast that's right. rule.
Well, so for me, it was... I never had it as a hobby. I was never a regular goer, as it were, to an arcade. Partly because I don't think there was really one near me that I knew about. I would have had to travel into sort of the nearest city, and there weren't that many cities that close to me. I was in a village with some towns nearby, and then you had to go beyond those towns to the cities, sort of thing. So I never went regularly to arcades. I would sometimes go as a kind of treat, sort of with my parents' kind of not consent as such, but I would be at places with my parents, like say a bowling alley, or you know, we'd have a day at the seaside. And I would have to very much say, oh, can we go to the arcade and play a couple of games? And it would really just be like, we could have a go on like two things or whatever. So I know some people used to just go to the arcade of their own volition because they were able to, because they had one nearby. For me, it was never that. I was always sort of with my parents at the time, and they probably didn't want me to blow loads and loads of 50p's and pound coins on stuff, so that's why it was always sort of limited. But I do have some good memories of going to arcades. I remember, I think I might have talked about this once before on possibly a podcast, if not just a video somewhere, where I played this safari game where you're in a jeep and you've got a lasso and you have to drive around and lasso certain animals like gazelles and elephants and stuff. And I've got a bit of a false memory about this, I think, because I looked up this game before this podcast. I think it was last night I looked it up and I've forgotten what it's called now. I think it's Jambo or Jambu Safari. I'm not sure.
Okay, yeah.
But my memory was that there was this weird, like, sort of peripheral control as part of the cabinet where if you reach up to your right, there's like this handle that you hold onto and swing it, and that makes the guy swing his lasso in the game. I remember physically using a controller for that, and the footage I can find online does not have that as an option. I don't know, maybe there's like different kinds of that cabinet and there's one that has a swing mechanic thing, a swing controller, or maybe I'm just completely making it up in my head, in my memory, because I was only, I don't know, 10 or something. So that's one of them. I played the Star Wars Pod Racer arcade game that has like two sort of handles that you hold up like Anakin, and you like control it like you're in the cockpit. That was great. And then just, you know, stuff like Time Crisis, Crazy Taxi, just some of the classics, really. Various motorbike games that I can't distinguish from each other, where you actually sit on a motorbike and lean left and right. So lots of happy memories, despite not having been that often. I think pretty much almost every visit I've ever had to an arcade sort of sticks with me because it's a rare treat. So, yeah.
No, I think I'm the same. I grew up in a small village and surprisingly there was no arcade there. Yeah. So, but when I was a teenager and apart from the seemingly mandatory seaside arcade visits that every British family has to have at least once.
Yeah. You
know, when I was a teenager, there was a small arcade attached to the bowling alley in the town that I went to secondary school in.
Mm.
And so, again, same as you, really, Time Crisis. It was a lot of House of the Dead. I was a big fan of House of the Dead 4. I liked that one a lot. But most of my fond memories of arcades comes from the claw machines.
Right,
because I've had like really good luck with claw machines. There was once when I was a kid and we were at the seaside and there was one of those, you know, the giant claw machines, like the ridiculous ones where they have huge stuffed toys in them. My mum gave us all a little bit of spending money and she was like, no, don't put it in there. That's a waste of money. And I managed to hook a Piglet and a Pooh Bear at
Sweet.
Once.
Double these, prizes.
Exactly. They were huge as well. And it carried them all the way over. And my mum just sort of trailed off mid chastising. unfortunately, Pooh Bear fell off, but I did get the Piglet. And I nearly got both of them. So I showed mum.
Sure
stupid
did.
Mum. And another time was actually on, where is it? Is it Tynemouth?
Yeah.
Went to Tynemouth with a
or
couple
Whitley
of...
Bay.
One of the two. Mm. Went to Tynemouth or Whitley Bay with a couple of guys from What Culture back in the day. And I used the claw machine there and I won myself a Spider-Man and a Captain America, which some people may have seen.
Oh, yeah, there's little
hanging
ones.
Out. Yeah, in like my fake plant that I have in my living room. So... that was a great day, coming home on the metro with two stuffed toys as, you know, someone in their mid-20s.
Yeah.
Really cool. Never forget it.
I remember, so I didn't think much about non-actual arcade cabinet games, but I remember playing a lot of air hockey when I used to go, like with my parents on a seaside visit. I wouldn't even go and play cabinets that much. I'd be like, oh, who wants to play air hockey? I love that. But also, my fondest memory... if I include things like claw machines, is we went after handing in our final assignment in our third year of uni to the local bowling alley. It was on like one of those big sort of retail estates. And I think we got there and there were no lanes available. You didn't normally have to book. And we're like, oh, there's nothing there. So we all went to the arcade. We spent ages in there. We're in there for like 2 hours or something, just playing loads of things, air hockey, claw machine, winning tokens and cashing them in for like a comb or whatever at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's a really fond memory, actually. You just reminded me then when you talked about claw machines.
Nice. It's good. I do like the arcades. Obviously not very common these days, but they do still exist on the British seasides. So
yeah, they do.
I missed going to Whitley Bay / Tynemouth last year. I'd sort of make an annual pilgrimage out there.
Yeah.
So I look forward to doing that. But although the idea of going into an arcade in the COVID era kind of makes me feel a bit sick. So
they're grubby enough as it is, aren't they?
Yeah. I don't know if I want to do that, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. Peter, it's time for something a bit strong.
It is. Hang on. Let me... got it.
Good.
Yeah.
It's time for weird news.
Weird news.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Weird news time. Peter, what weird video game news have you got?
I've got something here from PC Gamer. Hello, has that opened? I just clicked it. I've got the hyperlink in my notes here and it's not. All right, I'll flipping copy it and paste it then.
Oh,
jeez.
Oh, God.
Why are you being like that?
What a disaster.
Please. We're live on the internet right now. Right, there we go. This site can't be reached. There's a typo. Have they taken this article down? Hang on.
Oh no.
Let me quickly Google this.
I don't even know what your news is.
I read it yesterday. The link is not working for some reason. PC Gamer. Wow, this is great.
Is it their Subnautica Below Zero review?
It's not. It's an update. I'll inform you while I'm looking this up. It's about the Apple Fortnite thing that's going on. Here we go. I've got it.
Yeah,
this site can't
be
reached. I think it's PC Gamer just down at the moment.
Oh, is it pcgamer.com/UK/Peely Fortnite Court Apple?
It is exactly that.
Yeah, so I can see the headline, but I can't access the page.
Oh my God. My news is not available.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, well, maybe you'd like to give me your news first, and I will see if there's an alternate write-up to this story.
Or try the Wayback Machine. It might still be...
Possibly,
live.
Yeah.
It was 2 days ago, so there could have been a snapshot. Okay, I'll do mine then.
Okay.
I'm going to Kotaku. And Brian Ashcraft, Resident Evil Village makes for a delightfully messed up puppet show. They actually use a different word in the headline, but I don't think it's really... acceptable in the UK to say that word anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let me send it to you. Let me know what you think, because I feel like it's... I don't know for sure.
There's a word that you can say in... Oh, I don't know. I think that's probably okay. I thought it was going to be a lot worse than that.
No, it's not like a bad one. From personal experience, well, not that I've said it or anything, been told off, but like just from anecdotal experience, I thought like, you can't say that, can you? That doesn't sound...
I don't know, you might be right. You might be right, I don't know.
Anyway, moving on. So, Brian says, Resident Evil Village, the video game, seems scary, but the puppet show, absolutely adorable and totally messed up. It's reminiscent of a Japanese children's program, but with puppet versions of the game's terrifying characters and inevitable bloodshed. Come to Resident Evil Village, they sing. We're all a pleasant bunch. Not scary. Hijinks ensues, like Salvatore... Is it Salvatore or Salvatore?
Probably Salvatore.
Salvatore Moreau accidentally getting a chainsaw in the back. Later, Lady Dimitrescu sings about blood before drinking a bucket of it, going bananas, and accidentally throwing an axe into Carl Heisenberg's head. The YouTube clip title indicates that this is the first episode, so it seems more Resident Evil puppetry is in store. So you've seen this.
I have.
It is available if you just search Resident Evil Village puppets. They've got Lady Dimitrescu and then three other, I'm assuming, spooky boys from the game. And they're all just, it's presented like a children's TV show. They're just dancing around in front of a set with like upbeat music. And they're all just singing in like high-pitched sort of child-friendly Japanese voices.
It's very weird.
It's very, very strange. And as the title implies, there may be more of it. So go and give that a watch. It's really weird.
It is.
Don't know why they've done it. As if the rumors of the game not being as scary as Resi 7 weren't enough. They've got the puppets saying, we're not scary.
What's a triple negative? Is that?
I think that means that they aren't scary.
A double negative is a positive.
If they ain't not scary... That means they're...
Oh, I don't want to think about it. I don't know. Yeah.
They are scary.
They are whatever they say they are.
If they're not scary, then I think that means they're not scary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was hard work.
I have found what I'm hoping is a write-up of the same story here. I can't attest to its quality or validity. I think the issue with that PC Gamer thing, by the way, I've just noticed, is that the hyperlink has a typo in it. They've put Fortnite hyphen Peely, but neither Fortnite or, if I correct it to Fortnite, will take me to the article. So I think they might have screwed something up on their end because of a URL typo. I don't know. But anyway, here we go. So this is a Game Rant version. Fortnite's questionable Peely skin finds its way into courtroom during Epic versus Apple case. This is written by Noah Vaca on Game Rant. The Epic Games versus Apple court case, which started last week, has been nothing if not full of surprises. For any fans not up to speed on the situation, Epic Games entered a legal battle with Apple last year over the profits from the mobile iOS version of the hit battle royale game Fortnite. Since then, court proceedings began. The public learned about leaked Fortnite plans, internal emails, and sales figures from both companies. What caught the eye of most fans of the Battle Royale game last week was the news of leaked documents containing many of Epic Games' crossover plans for Fortnite. However, the court case has now seen an even more obscure occurrence as Fortnite's Peely character made its way into the discussion today. The news comes via a senior source reporter for The Verge, Addy Robertson, who took the liberty of transcribing and summarising much of today's court proceedings in the Epic Games versus Apple case over on Twitter. Reportedly, Peely was brought up today by the Epic Games head of marketing, Matthew Weisinger, who seemingly presented Fortnite's now somewhat iconic Agent Peely skin to the court. There's now an embedded tweet from Addy Robertson. Apple lawyer, : We have a large yellow banana here in a tuxedo? Weisinger. Yes, that's Peely. Apple. And in the tuxedo, he's known as Agent Peely. We thought it was better to go with the suit instead of the naked banana because we are in federal court right now. The Epic lawyer says, A little bit of a digression. We talked about Peely, our banana. There might have been an implication that showing Peely without a suit might have been inappropriate. Then it says in squared brackets, lawyer shows a picture of naked Peely in court. Is there anything inappropriate about Peely without clothes? And Weisinger says, it's just a banana, ma'am. So it seems Weisinger made a joke about how they intentionally chose to present the Agent Peely version of Peely, since it seemed more appropriate than showing the normal variant of Peely without any clothing on. And then basically the conversation went to... They moved on to something else, and then they came back to it later on and said, sorry, can we just... I just want to go back on something we talked about earlier. You know, earlier you said it would have been inappropriate to show naked Peely. I just want to talk about how inappropriate that is. So I think they were worried that on the court record,
right,
Weisinger had implied that... So we've got this skin for Peely, and he's completely naked, and it's really graphic and not appropriate.
You can see his banana and everything.
Yeah, so they sort of, after the fact, thought, can we just backpedal a moment? We want to go back to when we talked about Peely earlier, because is it inappropriate with Peely with no clothes? And the reply was, it's just a banana, ma'am.
Wow.
Although there's some dispute over whether he said, it's just a banana, ma'am, or it's just a banana, man. That's what the PC Gamer article was saying yesterday,
right,
but that's lost now to the mists of time.
Oh, no. Maybe Apple's taking them to court.
Yeah.
This court case is so stupid, and it's brought out some really, really interesting information so far, particularly regarding PlayStation and crossplay and how they make money from crossplay, and that's why they waited so long and all sorts of other stuff. Epic offered PlayStation money in exchange for exclusives on the Epic store and stuff. Like, it's some really interesting stuff has come to light. But this is what they're really arguing about the banana skin.
Yeah.
And whether or not someone paying for it should have to pay Apple as well. It's so stupid.
It's ridiculous.
$2 billion companies punching each other. Although yeah. Apple's probably a $1 trillion company, is it? I don't know.
Well, yeah, probably. I don't know. Anyway, apologies for that cluster funk there.
That's all right. We got there.
We did, yeah. Well, it's time to move on now to question three. This is from Brooks Existentialist, although Jack Statham asked a similar question. So, hello, lads. Are there any video game properties you would like to see used in another game genre? Like how Tales from the Borderlands moved Borderlands from a looter shooter to an episodic adventure game. Thanks always for all the awesome content you have all produced. And Jack Statham's example was how Halo Wars was a sort of strategy game, kind of shooting off from a first-person shooter game. So, I mean, I've got one immediately sprung to mind that I realised sort of already exists, but I'd really like to see, and again, it's also not a gaming franchise, it's a multimedia franchise, but I'd love to see a survival horror Jurassic Park game. And then I suddenly thought, well, that's just, I mean, it's basically Dino Crisis, isn't it? But in any case, they should bring back Dino Crisis or do a Jurassic Park or just a dinosaur survival horror game. I think that would be great. Mm-hmm. But putting that one aside, which doesn't quite qualify, I would like to see some games that are very linear opened up into a more open world RPG style, and then also vice versa. So one example is, I think The Order 1886 was a great game, and I liked the way they did it in a linear style. There was nothing wrong with that at all. But I think it's a very interesting universe, and I've always wanted to, I mean, it's not that I never have, but I always like to play in sort of Victorian England style worlds. I think it's a very interesting setting. So I would love to see The Order opened up into a big sprawling RPG with a huge city to explore and monsters to hunt down and you know, all that kind of thing. I think it would be great. And then as an example of the kind of the inverse of that, I think that Red Dead Redemption would arguably interest me just as much, if not more, if they brought out a more kind of potted, directed, linear story set in the Wild West. I think, of course, there's a lot to be said for the fact that Red Dead Redemption has this fantastic world of, well, Red Dead Redemption 2 in particular has this huge world that they put hours and hours and hours into, well, days, months, and there's a lot to be said for that, and a lot of people thoroughly enjoy all aspects of that game. But for me, and I think for you too, Ben, it was arguably a bit much. It was a bit overwhelming, and, you know, the fact that there were even mechanics down to, like, making sure that, I think you had to, like, make sure you had a wash, and, you know, like, that would affect, if you're not had a bath, that would affect things, and you had to cook for your camp, and there's a lot to juggle in that game. And I think the Wild West setting is a very interesting one. But for me, I would quite like to try a more linear experience. I quite enjoyed Call of Juarez back in the day, the first one, the original. So more of that for me. That's what I'd love to see.
Nice.
Admittedly, those aren't huge leaps of genre. They're just more kind of opening up or narrowing down the world, as opposed to going from a FPS to an RTS. But those are my ones.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to use this as an excuse to talk about Telltale games, really.
Right. Yeah.
Because they adapted. Obviously, they never worked with an original IP. It was all existing stuff. And I think one of the, apart from Minecraft, and that one was just dire. The only game franchise, I believe, unless I'm misremembering, that they worked with was Borderlands. And that was so good. It was so good. And there have been numerous occasions where I've thought, man, I would love to experience this game or this story, but through the lens of an episodic Telltale style game. And I was gutted when they closed down, because I think I played almost all of the Telltale games, or at least all of the ones released post The Walking Dead, because they were a bit ropey before then with Jurassic Park and what was it? It was Back to the Future as well. I didn't really like Back to the Future one. And I didn't play the final season of The Walking Dead. And I know that Telltale are back, but they're not quite the same. They haven't got the same staff on. And I think they do have, they've said that they're going to pick up a lot of the licenses that they dropped when they were closed. But understandably, I think they're taking a far more cautious approach instead of juggling like four projects at once.
Yeah.
They may well be focusing on one at a time. So we'll probably be getting these games far less frequently. But I do wish that they return to the kind of thing they did with Borderlands, because the Borderlands world is fantastic and the characters are great, but a lot of people either can't get on board with the genre or they found the humor off-putting, which is totally understandable. Whereas the way that it was interpreted by Telltale was actually, it was just really good and it appealed to so many more people. And I'm not saying it sold more than Borderlands, but in terms of it appealed to not just Borderlands fans. A lot of people played it who'd never played Borderlands before or just didn't really like Borderlands, and they said that actually this was really funny and it was really good. And if you haven't played Tales from the Borderlands, go and play it, because I think it was recently re-released. So do go and get it. It's a great game, and I would like to see basically any game just adapted to that format, because it just allows them to explore the world. It doesn't necessarily have to be, say, beat for beat, what happened in The Last of Us? We don't need that, you know. But it could be a The Last of Us, a Telltale's The Last of Us, and it could just be a side story, but
just different told characters, using maybe.
Yeah, you yeah. told using their mechanics, and I think there's a place for that. And the only team that's really doing that right now are the Life is Strange devs. So we'll see what Telltale ends up doing. But yeah, more games in that style, please. Episodic games, I do like them.
Yeah.
I do like him.
Wonderful. Well, it's time for a discussion of a substantial size.
It is, Peter. It is time for the big discussion.
Oh.
Big discussion.
Oh.
Big discussion time. This week, the big discussion comes from Ash Holly, who says, I love games and played a lot when I was younger, but as I've grown up and gained rubbish responsibilities like a job, I have less time to play games I want. So I found myself watching streamers like you fine boys stream certain games I'm interested in of playing them. Hang on. I'm interested instead of playing them myself to get my fix. That was my bad. Do you feel that watching a streamed game is a good substitute, or do you think to fully enjoy a game you need to experience playing it firsthand? Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Ash.
Thank you, Ash.
I think it very much comes down to the genre, and perhaps even within that, just the specific game we're talking about. It's not even just specific to a genre. But for example, I, when a couple of walking sims came out, I at the time had just too much on to play them, or, you know, I think sometimes it was a case of I don't have that much expendable income, and there are other games I want to buy and play, so I can't invest in that right now. But I watched a couple of them on YouTube before I ever played them. So Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, I watched that in full on YouTube. I think it was Kim Richards' version, her playthrough.
Oh, okay.
I think it was. I watched, I think, most of Firewatch. I don't know if I watched the whole thing at the time, but... again, that was another one that I really enjoyed. I even watched, to go back to the previous question, I watched Telltale's Jurassic Park all the way through on YouTube.
Nice.
And, you know, I thought it was okay. Like, I agree, it's certainly not their best. But perhaps it was that actually, maybe it was quite nice to sit down and think, I've not had to invest in this, so I can just kind of take in the story. You know, it's set in an interesting time period, or it's set basically parallel almost to the first film when everything's going wrong, so that was kind of intriguing. But those sorts of games, I think, you know, you don't really have to necessarily play them to fully enjoy the experience. Perhaps it comes down to how many decisions you make in those games and to what extent they actually affect the experience. So, you know, maybe with something like The Walking Dead, that might be something that's perhaps a little better to play yourself. And certainly when you start delving away from that genre entirely and into RPGs that have a morality system and lots of like significant story branching points, you know, things like that where there are decisions to be made. Maybe there's something to be said for playing that yourself and, you know, telling your own story, creating your own character rather than watching someone else's. You know, I know there have been times where I've watched someone's playthrough of a game, either that I've played before or not, and they've chosen to do something where I've thought, oh, that's the exact opposite of what I would have done. And so to that extent, you know, there could be an argument to say that games like that are better played yourself than watched. But, you know, on the other hand, there are games that are very linear, that aren't sort of narrative-style games like your Walking Sims and your Telltales. You know, even something like The Last of Us probably works well enough if you just don't have the time or the money or the console to play something like The Last of Us. There's probably no harm in sitting and watching that because the story's the same for everyone. You're only missing out on pulling triggers on your controller. So I don't know. I think perhaps there's also an argument to say that watching something without a commentary might be more immersive and allow you to experience the game in the way that you would have done playing it yourself. You know, just taking in what's on screen, taking in the game itself, rather than having someone kind of chatting over the top of it and giving their own thoughts. Some people might prefer having someone else's opinion on there to give them a different perspective. So there's all different ways to kind of take these things in via YouTube. And yeah, I think ultimately it really comes down to the kind of game. I mean, horror games, for example, that might not even be down to whether you can afford it or whether you have the right console. You might be the kind of person who, you might have a you know, a PlayStation that can run the latest Resident Evil game, and you might be able to afford to buy it, but you might think, I don't want to sit down and play that with myself with the controller in hand. I want to be able to pause it or look away or turn it down a bit when it gets spooky. So, you know, that's another example of where you can benefit from watching something on YouTube that's not really to do with whether the game is available to you or whether you've got the time or the money. So,
yeah.
I think there's no shame in watching stuff on YouTube, especially if circumstances kind of force your hand in that way. And of course, there's an argument to say that games are for playing and you get something out of playing them that you don't get from watching them. I completely agree with anyone who thinks that. But if it's your only choice or your best choice, absolutely go for it. You're not going to miss out too much, I don't think.
I think playing a game yourself will always be the best way to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
It's watching it is no substitution for playing it. Removing the fact that you're not playing it yourself, if you're watching a stream, for example, you have donations and alerts and a person talking over the top. Especially when it comes to sort of narratively driven games, you will definitely not be getting an optimal experience. Not the experience that the developers and the creatives behind the game intended for you to have.
Yeah.
That being said, sometimes you can't play a game yourself. Maybe you don't have the hardware, or you can't afford the game, or you get too spooked, or maybe there's an accessibility reason that's causing you from not playing it. But you don't want to miss out. So I think it sort of started on YouTube with Let's Plays, and, you know, everyone releasing 20-minute chunks of like a 10-hour game and going for like 60 parts, which looks ridiculous now in hindsight.
Yeah.
To see so many parts. Then there were sort of, and there still are, and I've consumed some of these, which I'll get onto in a minute, long plays with no commentary.
Commentary free,
Yeah, which is a good way to experience a game if you can't play it yourself. And now there's streaming. I think streaming is so popular, especially currently, because it lets you feel like you're part of the conversation, lets you get involved with the community, and you're interacting with someone who is playing the game and lots of other people who are watching it. You're just part of the audience and you're there live, and there's sort of an experience to that. And that's why so many people like to experience games that way. Or maybe they're not interested in the game at all and they're just there because, you know, they're just there for a laugh and it's a fun thing to do in an evening when you've got nothing else on, is just be part of a community watching someone play a game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally watch any streamers, but for a while at work when we were in the office, I used to have a streamer called Lobos Jr. or Lobos. His VODs, he used to do various, he still does, like various Soulsborne challenge runs and stuff. And I would have it like open in a window while I was doing admin stuff where I didn't need two screens. But I have watched a few no commentary long plays for Resident Evil games that I don't think I'm going to get around to playing, like Code Veronica. I have no interest in playing that, so I watched someone play through that with no commentary. And I did the same for the original PS1 releases of Resi's 1 and 2, having played the remakes of both. So there's definitely a space for that stuff, and I absolutely am not taking anything away from anyone who prefers to or frequently experiences games in this manner, but I still uphold that playing the game is the best way to experience it, because that's what it is. You know, you're meant to play games, and if you can't, there's lots of fantastic avenues for you to experience them, but you're not getting the full experience, I would argue.
Yeah, I just realized they sort of only half answered the question in that it was specifically about streamers. And I agree that in that case, I don't think streaming is the way to take in a game. If you are in that position where you can't afford a game, or you don't have the hardware, or whatever the reason is, and you want to experience a game just for the game, then yeah, I think long play on YouTube with no commentary is the best way to do that. As you say, there are other reasons to take in a game via Twitch or on a stream on YouTube, the community and so on. And, you know, again, it can be, maybe it's nice to get another perspective or watch someone else's reaction, especially for a game that maybe you have played and you want to kind of relive it. Maybe that is quite a good way to watch it. But I think if you don't have time for games and you think, I want to know what happens in this game, I want to experience that story, I think for me, streaming is probably not the ideal way to do it. It's why I don't stream games that I've not played before, because
yeah,
I don't want
my...
Yeah,
that's what I was about to say. Neither of us do that, do we?
No, I don't want my first experience of a game to be... the subscriptions and donations and bits are always gratefully received, but I don't want those to be coming up in the middle of a crucial cutscene, especially in a game where I can't pause it, or, you know, when I'm in the middle of a firefight and people are talking, they're doing dialogue or whatever, and suddenly it's, hey guys, thanks very much for streaming this game, be whip.
yeah.
You know, as I say, gratefully received, but that's why I don't play games that I've not played before. I mean, it's a rule of thumb. Occasionally I might do that, but yeah, not ones that I'm really interested in playing.
Yeah, and it's the same reason why I don't normally go for hugely narrative-heavy games, you know, especially definitely ones that I haven't played before, but, like, it's why I wouldn't play something that could potentially be someone's first experience of it and then it be interrupted constantly by alerts. Like, it's just not the best way to experience that. But having said that, there are plenty of games that are perfect for streaming, you know? And
yeah,
I think we're literally just talking about story-heavy games here because there's all manner of games that are great on stream and they don't need, you know, to be saved from being interrupted by alerts, like Adam Pacitti's streams in Red Dead Redemption 2. I don't think he's doing much story. I think he's just messing around in the wilderness. Like,
right,
that's perfect for that. You know, no one's going to miss out on any important story beats. But then, you know, you and I have played through Man of Medan and what's it called? Little Hope.
Little Hope.
And those are pretty
Beyond
story.
Two Souls.
Yeah, those are pretty story driven. And at least two of those we hadn't played prior. But I think there was an element of, we sort of knew that they were a bit cheesy and rubbish, and so story kind of takes a bit more of a back seat. But if there's a game, you know, that I would consider very important to me, like, for example, I wouldn't stream the Mass Effect Remastered trilogy purely because it's way too long anyway, and I'm not going to start streaming that in 2-hour chunks. But also because I just can't think of a worse game to stream. Like, to have that interrupted constantly in such a stop-start fashion,
yeah,
and it's just not a great way to stream it. And that's, I think that's going to be on a case-by-case basis, and it's certainly going to be on a streamer-by-streamer basis. But ultimately, Peter and I, we aren't really streamers. It's just a small thing we do as part of our job. You know, there are people like Boof and Rach and other sort of friends of the channel who that is their whole job, and they're way more qualified than us to talk about what they do and, you know, don't want to stream. But certainly as just a small part of our job for a couple of hours a week, you know, we'd rather dedicate that time to something that we feel like we can explore properly, I suppose, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So we'll see how Resident Evil goes down with the...
We will. I think Resi's okay. I don't know. Again, case-by-case basis, but I think Resi is one of those games, as you say, with horror games that people will likely tune in and want to watch, because horror games don't necessarily appeal to everybody, but they do in sort of a morbid curiosity way. Yeah. And the fact that it's being interrupted and talked over perhaps makes it far more manageable.
Yeah, kind of brings you down to earth a bit.
Yeah, for a lot of people. So yeah, there we are. But again, different strokes for different folks. Let us know what you think, as always. Peter.
Yes.
Where can people find us? On the internet.
On the internet. Well, our content goes out both in streaming form and just video uploads on youtube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. Remember, if you've got Amazon Prime, one of the many benefits of that, there's a free ad there for Amazon Prime, is that you get a Twitch sub along with that at no extra cost. So you can sort of spend that on us. You'll get all the usual kind of sub bonuses, and it won't cost you anything extra, so consider doing that. Amazon Prime, Twitch Prime sub thing. Thank you for modding us, Lord Brotovich, Madsterdactyl, and Trowling Badger, when we are streaming on YouTube and Twitch. Our social media presence is available at twitter.com and facebook.com/TeamTripleJump. Luke Eldon continues to look after Facebook. Thank you, Luke. The Patreon is patreon.com/TeamTripleJump. Lots of rewards available on there at different tiers. Go and check them out, see what's available to you. Our website is triplej.mup. That's triplej.mp. If you go to triplej.mup/Discord, that will send you straight to our Discord, which is modded by Jack, Joe, and Hollowies. Thank you, guys. triplej.mup/podcast will take you to an audio form of the podcast. If you're watching on YouTube right now, you can download the audio version. triplej.mup/VODs will take you to our VODs channel on YouTube, where all of our VODs get uploaded. And finally, triplejumpshop.com is where our shop is. You can follow at triplejumpshop on Twitter to find out the latest on the new drops that are coming. And I believe you can go to triplej.mup/shop, and that will actually send you straight to triplejumpshop.com. So either of those should work for you.
Mm-hmm. You can follow Peter on Instagram and Twitter at ThatPeterAustin, and myself just on Twitter at Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, streams every Monday, Thursday, Friday. Thursdays being the joint streams on YouTube, and Monday and Friday being the solo streams on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly. Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. Podcast is every Saturday. We do shows once every other week or thereabouts, you know, dotting around somewhere.
Yeah, whenever you like.
Something like that. Why not leave a review on iTunes or your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. This week, Peter, we have a Nintendo Switch Lite to give away.
A blue one.
It's real. The blue one that everyone says is purple, and then Nintendo said, no, it's blue. And everyone said, no, it's actually purple, but it's called blue. So... You can go to all of our social media and also our website to find out more about that. In fact, do I have the link here? Let me just check. triplej.mup/Nintendo-Switch-Lite-Blue-Giveaway/. Simple. Easy.
Yeah.
You'll find it, I'm sure. Just go to our social media. You'll see it. The competition closes on... It doesn't even say. Brilliant. The competition closes on the 18th. I am scrolling, hang on the 18th of May, at midday. That's my guess. Yes, that's true. Yeah, 18th of May at midday. And all you need to do is go there. You can enter several times based on various interactions, like visit the YouTube channel, follow us on Twitch, subscribe to the podcast, retweet us on Twitter, join the Discord server, all sorts of stuff. And every time you do one of those things, you get an entry. And then we'll draw one winner. It is UK only. It is a UK Switch with a UK power adapter, and it costs money to ship things places. So only the UK, I'm afraid.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, well, you know, one of you will win a Switch, so
yeah,
get over it.
It was a Worst Games Ever week this week, or it is a Worst Games Ever week this week. So it went out yesterday for patrons of the Hot and Fresh tier and will be out for everyone else tomorrow. So have a look on YouTube for that if you're not a patron. Very exciting.
Absolutely. We also
did a couple of Quipscopes this week. We've done and recorded and published one already at time of recording of this podcast on Resident Evil 8. Having played some Dark Alliance, I think we'll probably record one of those today, and that should be out as well, hopefully. So certainly one Quipscope, if not two, available. They are coming to the podcast feed. That's confirmed, right, Ben? We did a quiz.
We did do the poll. The poll came back in favour of the Quipscopes coming to the podcast feed. There were some concerns that it might clutter up the podcast feed, and although that there is potentially going to be two on the podcast feed this week, Quipscope isn't all that regular.
No,
so,
it's really not.
You know, we don't have the time, the money, or the PR contacts to play everything, so it won't be cluttering up the feed, but if you really, really don't like it, do let us know. But someone did give us some feedback on Twitter and said, hey, it's a great idea. You know, might as well listen to it. There we are. Look forward to those. Also, this week is another Playing Every launch game, this time the Xbox. Please do give it a watch, because it was kind of expensive to get all the games, and also it was a flipping nightmare to capture the footage. So do watch that if you want to see it's 20 years ago the Xbox came out.
Yeah.
How crazy is that? One final thing I didn't add on here, actually, is that the Sniper 2 speedrun has taken a step in the right direction, in that our account is now 7 days old on speedrun.com, and we can now request that the Sniper 2 be added as a speedrun game. So I'm going to do that today, and hopefully we'll be able to submit our speedrun very soon. And
I can't wait until people start like competing with us on that and get
way better. All they need to do is
camera.
They just need to skip the blooming cutscenes.
They will do that, because that's what speedrunners do. So they'll, you know, someone will beat the world record very quickly with like a 30-minute run, and but then eventually, when it becomes a huge sensation in the speedrunning world, which it will, and people start making those speedrun history videos, which I find really interesting, we'll get name dropped as the people who came up with the category.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
Surely.
So exciting. we'll keep you posted on that, but we're moving in the right direction. We will soon to be recognized as the fastest The Sniper 2 players in the entire world. Hopefully, if they accept us. We're not mocking speedruns, we're just mocking The Sniper 2, and hopefully they see through that and don't think we're taking the piss, but we'll see what happens.
Peter, love that you had the little timer software running without any splits at all. You just hit start.
I and just then wanted like to be part of the club.
2 hour, whatever, 1 hour 50 or whatever, you just hit stop.
I still have a folder on my desktop. I exported anything that timer software let me save. I have saved as a file, just in case they need it as some kind of proof. I don't really know. But according to this, once we submit a game and it's been accepted, we immediately become a moderator for that game.
Whoa.
So it looks like we'll be able to just instantly approve our own speedrun, which would be great. But I don't, honestly, I don't know. So stay tuned. We'll post on social media. It may even happen before this episode comes out, but that's we're doing it. Peter, who are we sponsored by this week as we disappear?
We're sponsored by read a book, you idiots. Learn how to read, and if you need something to help you learn how to read, well, read a game book, Mass Effect Literary Edition, if that's what it's going to take to get you guys to turn off your X boards and read a book, then read the Mass Effect ones.
Yeah. Stupid idiots.
Yeah.
Read a book.
Idiots.
Be cool. Right, we're going to go. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Have a good weekend and stay safe already.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.